Now we'll head off to discover what's happening beyond the headlines. Peter Dykstra is our guide. He publishes EHN.org, Environmental Health News, and TheDailyClimate.org. He's on the line from Conyers, Georgia now. Hi there, Peter.
Hi, Steve. There's a story that's been playing out this year that shows how honest efforts to protect the environment can still end up in a train wreck. The participants in the train wreck, a federally protected estuary, a decades-old organic family farm business, federal regulators, and lurking in the background, world-class chefs and the Koch brothers.
Wow, that's quite a cast of characters. How do they all come together?
Not very comfortably. The Lunny family raises grass-fed beef and prized oysters on their spread inside California's Point Reyes National Seashore. When the feds created the seashore in the 1960s, they allowed some commercial entities, including the oyster operation, to stay open. But half a century later, those agreements have expired, and the Interior Department told the Drake's Bay Oyster Company they'd have to close up.
So, is there a bad guy in this episode?
I don't think so. The Interior Department gave the Lunny family a grace period that lasted for decades, but then they battled them in court because they felt if they made an exception for this sustainable operation, they'd be buried in court cases from businesses maybe not quite as admirable as the Drake's Bay Oyster Company. The Lunnys fought to keep their business, drawing endorsements from the likes of Alice Waters, the renowned pro-environment sustainable chef, and many other high-end chefs and foodies. They also brought in legal power for a lengthy court battle, taking some guilt by association heat for retaining a firm that had once served the Koch brothers, regarded by many environmentalists as villains par excellence. To me, it's a case where nobody's wrong. The Interior Department did what it had to do, and the Lunny family did what any business would do.
But they didn't both win.
The Lunnys are planning to open a gourmet restaurant now that the oyster farm is gone. The feds lost a few environmentally minded friends. The foodies lose a source of what one writer called slimy but delicious bivalves. But maybe the only saving grace is that a beautiful stretch of coastline called the Drake's Estero is one step closer to being wild again.
So a little good news, even from an environmental train wreck, Peter. What's your next item?
Not so good news on someone worthy of a tribute. Last week, we paid respects to the late Martin Lydon, a hero of the modern environmental movement. And this week, a woman regarded by many as one of the heroes of environmental science, Theo Colburn, passed away at age 87.
Yeah, we've had Theo Colburn on the show over the years. She pioneered much of the science on the risks that some chemicals pose to our reproductive and immune systems, as well as our brains.
Right. The so-called endocrine-disrupting chemicals like bisphenol A, which is often found in plastic or metal food containers, is still a subject of some furious debate among scientists, not to mention a huge amount of industry pushback. Theo won the respect that science pioneers often do and has been compared to Rachel Carson. And like Rachel Carson, she withstood some furious political attacks. Unlike Rachel, she lived long enough to see much of her work confirmed and vindicated by other scientists. Late in life, she turned her attention to the potential risks from the swarm of chemicals used in the fracking process.
And those fracking chemicals are still shrouded in mystery. What have you brought us from the Environmental History Vault this week, Peter?
We're going to go back to Northern California. It's hard to believe that it was 15 years ago this week that an activist named Julia Butterfly Hill moved out of the pad she'd lived in for the previous 2 years.
And as I recall, literally it was some pad, a platform near the top of a coastal redwood tree.
Yeah, 2 years earlier, Julia, 23 years old at the time, became the center of attention when she climbed up the 180-foot tree in a symbolic protest to save it in a redwood forest scheduled to be logged. She endured some harassment and some pretty cold, soggy Northern California weather, living in the tree for 2 years and 8 days, climbing down after she turned 25 because she'd won concessions from the Pacific Lumber Company. She named the tree Luna, but after both she and the tree became worldwide symbols, somebody took a chainsaw to Luna, cutting about 60% of the way through the trunk.
Why?
Because. Sorry, that's the best answer available. Julia was making a point, so I guess somebody thought this was an appropriate counterpoint. Arborists were able to save the tree with steel braces and cables, and it's still a mighty and symbolic redwood today, instead of being somebody's patio furniture. And Julia Butterfly Hill's activism also continues, but at ground level.
Well, thanks, Peter. Peter Dykstra is the publisher of Environmental Health News, that's EHN.org, and TheDailyClimate.org. Talk to you soon, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Talk to you soon.
And there's more on these stories at our website, loe.org.